Come, senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't lock up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Amitai Etzioni, who's a university professor and professor of international affairs and director of the Institute for Communitarian Policy Studies at George Washington University. He served as a senior advisor to the White House from 1979 to 1980, and in 1990 he founded the Communitarian Network, a not-for-profit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to shoring up the moral, social, and political foundations of society. Dr. Etzioni is the author of 24 books, including The New Golden Rule, The Spirit of Community, and The Moral Dimension, Towards a New Economics. His most recent books are My Brother's Keeper, A Memoir and a Message, From Empire to Community, A New Approach to International Relations, and How Patriotic is the Patriot Act. He has an article at Salon.com, How Conservatives Still Run America Despite Losing Elections. Welcome to Background Briefing, Amitai Etzioni.
Well, thank you very much for having me again.
And today in the New York Times, we learned that Senator Max Baucus, 28 of his former aides are now lobbying for various tax policy for various telecommunications businesses, blue chip clients like oil companies, retailer and financial firms. And of course, Max Baucus is a key Democratic senator from Montana. He was the man largely given the point man on the first thing that Obama did when he came in with a substantial majority. He won the presidency in 2008 by incredible margins that hadn't been seen for a long time. The Democrats controlled the House and the Senate, and their biggest signature item was the health care bill that really ended up in the lap of Max Baucus and was compromised to death. And it's always been a mystery to me, Amitai Etzioni, why at that moment when Obama had all of that energy, why he wasn't able to get a lot done and had the wind at his back. And paradoxically, of course, that was the same moment that the Tea Party was born, out of the outrage over Wall Street. But instead of expressing outrage over the Wall Street and galvanizing populism on the left, it looks like Obama handed a lot of it to Max Baucus.
Well, that's very, very true. You already raised three different issues. All are crucial to this general point we are making, that while the Republicans as a party may not doing well, because they are about at least a third of the elected Democrats are conservatives and act and vote like Republicans, in effect, the conservatives get their way even when the Republican Party does not. It sounds odd, but if you think about it, if you take all the Republicans and add a third of the Democrats, their agenda will win most times. So one reason are the lobbies. It's true, there are lobbies of all kinds. The labor unions also lobby, and so do the teachers. But by and large, the business lobbies have much deeper pockets, are much more organized, and there are many more of them. So when it comes to campaign contributions, which very, very often swing Congress, especially after the Supreme Court decision, which allows unlimited donation by corporations, we have the lobbying tilts the system into a conservative direction. And second, you talked about the energy and the behind President Obama when he was elected. But we must understand the difference between people voting once every 4 years or 2 years and what happens between election days. And there, when you need an act of Congress, you cannot simply say, I got 50X percent of the public vote, therefore you have to follow me. Members of Congress obviously follow their own constituency. So let me give you a quick example so they won't be so abstract. What happened now is this very meager Nebish gun control bill. There were three little items which together wouldn't amount to much, but I agree they're better than nothing. So the first thing, Senator Reid, the leading senator for the Democrats, removed the ban on assault rifles from the bill so it wouldn't even come up for vote and discuss. Why? Because he found out that out of the 53 Democratic senators, the majority, 15 of them would not support it because they come from red states, from conservative states. So you had 40 relatively progressive senators for the gun bill, 60 the Republicans plus 15 Democrats against it. And I can give you one example or the other. All have the same structure, that if you count noses as Democrats or Republicans, you think the Democrats should have it. If you count them by the kind of lobbying and politics they represent, unfortunately, the conservatives have it. Not every time, most times.
Well, actually, I don't blame you for being a little bit confused by my first question, Amit Anciani, because I got a little confused myself there. The first thing that Obama did was the stimulus, and a lot of people like Krugman and others were saying it's not big enough, and right. That's what Max Baucus was in charge of. It wasn't the health care. That was Ben Nelson, who another one of these conservative Democrats who ended up watering that down. But, you know, the argument is that had Obama not caved in to the Republicans' demand to make a third of the stimulus tax breaks and made a bigger stimulus, the economy would have recovered long ago, and he wouldn't be in the mess he's in today.
It's a combination of the factors you mentioned, plus the fact that the president, in his whistle, in his guts, does not like to confront. He really has his own negotiation style, where he starts by giving you half of what you possibly could ask for, just to show you that he means well, he's a nice guy. Then he makes some more concessions, and then he begins negotiations. And let me go back to the example you gave. If you look back at what Larry Summers, who was at that time the Secretary of the Treasury, was working with the President, he told the President you should not go for the real big stimulus package, because the Congress will not accept it, and you will have to fight. So even before they start talking to Congress, they already cut it. Then you correct, of course, Senator Nelson, a conservative Democrat, voted it down some more, and we ended up in the mess we are. But let's jump back to health care. Before anything happened, President Obama called the insurance companies and promised them not to put single payer, the preferred liberal option, even on the table, because he was told that unless he mollifies the insurance companies, he will end up like Hillary, he won't have a chance to get a bill at all. The second people he called in was Big Pharma, the pharmaceutical industries, and promised them that the bill will not include the right of Medicare to negotiate for drug prices or to import drugs from other countries in which they have much lower costs. So from the very beginning, the president also has not shown the kind of backbone, a little stature, a little strength, a little leadership. So he gives away half the shop, then the conservative Democrats finish the job.
So is there something else at play here, though, Amit Anciani, again, university professor and professor of international affairs and director of the Institute for Communitarian Policy Studies at George Washington University, and he has an article at Salon.com, How Conservatives Still Run America Despite Losing Elections. Now, Harry Reid, who you mentioned, has certainly compromised on the very modest gun control or gun safety bill that is being taken up this week, and we're not even sure which of the bills will be taken up, but certainly the assault weapon bans have already been preemptively stripped out. It looks like he got snookered by Mitch McConnell. The younger Democrats in the Senate were furious about this usurpation of power by the Republicans, insisting on a 60-vote threshold on almost all bills, the filibuster threshold. Rather than go what they call the nuclear option, Reid made a deal with Mitch McConnell and promptly got completely snookered. And the Republicans just are not allowing any of the judicial nominations, the key ones, to go through, and many of the appointments to the executive branch and the cabinet appointments they've held up, as we know, with the CIA director and the Secretary of Defense, and others have been submitted, having to fill out thousands of pages of questionnaires. None of this has happened before. The minority party is incredibly aggressive, and somehow or other, it's able to bully the majority into compromising or caving. So what explains that? Because, you know,
it's not a minority party. If you're a minority party, you mean the Republicans.
Right.
The proper unit to think about is what I call a conservative party.
Right.
The Republicans have allies among some of the Democrats who vote with them. The liberals don't have any Republicans who vote with them. The minority party are the liberal Democrats. Here another quick, very, very telling, simple, straightforward example. During the inaugural speech, the president focused on one issue. He really gave it more play than anything else, and that was climate protection. That's what he ran up the flagpole. You haven't heard a thing about it since. Why? Because immediately after the inaugural speech, the conservative Democrats from coal states came and said, oh, no, we're not going to support that. They joined the Republicans and made it very clear they're not going to, and that's the end of climate improvement for the next 4 years. He may do some an executive order. So because one of the many reasons, the other reason, of course, we don't read the politics right. You can't have to start changing it unless you start getting it right. What the map is like. The map is the minority party Republicans, together with conservative Democrats, make a majority. Now, let me jump one more thing, which is, I appreciate you mentioned the article in the Salon. One other thing happens, we pay a lot of attention, as you should, to the laws which are being enacted. But there's something happening where we are not paying a lot of attention. And that is why we're all asking, did they pass a ban on assault rifles? Did they pass a ban on high-capacity magazines and improved background checks? They did act. They passed 4 corrections to the regulations, which makes it next to impossible to enforce these laws. So the Conservative Party, the Republicans plus Democrats, and you can see the details on this little article I did. For instance, they will not allow the Bureau of Fire and Tobacco and Arms, which is in charge of enforcing the law, to use a computer. The gun checks would have to be done on pieces of paper. Can you imagine how that sets back the enforcement of that law? The information collected can be kept only for 24 hours. And there are 2 other things like that. They didn't allow the Bureau to have a director. When the Bureau doesn't have a director, it gets very set back, very hobbled. So unless we start to get correctly the lay of the land, we will not be able to change it.
Well, I think your point's definitely well taken about that there's a Conservative Party and a small Liberal Party of Liberal Democrats, and that the so-called centrist Democrats more often than not do vote with the Republicans, picking on issues involving guns, because the conventional wisdom is they're in red states and the NRA has a lot of sway. And in coal states, as you mentioned, Manchin, for example, is both for guns and for coal, West Virginia. But on the judicial nominees, they had the majority vote. The Democrats had the majority vote. They just couldn't get around the filibuster, and that's the real issue, isn't it? You know,
you're absolutely right. The Republicans or Conservative Party succeeded changing the rules of the game. In addition to the substantive specific changes they made, they also, you're right, the filibuster used to be something relatively rare, used for very special occasion, and requires you to actually filibuster. They turned it into a practical veto. They did other changes. You used to be able to make recess appointments. If you couldn't get somebody through the regular process, the president could, while Congress was not in session, make recess appointments, and in this way somehow get something done. Well, they now found a little gimmick. They never out of session. So they don't allow any more Congress to take a break. They mechanically, technically keep Congress open at all times. And this way, they succeeded in killing recess appointments. Many other changes, of course. The most important one is the one made by the Roberts Court, the Citizens United, which really is opening the floodgates to corporate money into the election. So we really are not in a good place. By the way, while we talk about campaign financing, let me make a prediction. I studied that years ago when PACs first became legal. It takes a while before the corporations catch on. When the law has changed, none of the corporations likes to be the first to jump in to do things which until last year were considered illegal and are kind of a little tainted. And so they let others take the lead. But when they see that more and more corporations jump in, then they go full hog. These last elections, corporations really did not make very large contributions yet. Wait to see the next election. Look, the total cost of the election last time for all concerns, all parties, was about $2 billion. Now, the profit alone, I'm talking about not the income, the profit of Exxon for last year was $44 billion. It'd be no problem at all for Exxon to run a campaign contribution of $1 billion. So we're about to see even more gunpowder or money behind conservative causes. May I go back to the point you made about the Tea Party, which I think is very important?
Sure.
You see, I think the Tea Party got one point right. This government is really not working for us very often. So their frustration with the government very often is justified. Where we failed, where liberals and the left failed, is showing them that why the government is not working, that is what's called captured, that it's captured by special interests. And so there is the potential. If we could get the Tea Party to see that the reason the government often is responsive not to people's needs is because it's captured by special interests, then we may be able to direct what I think is a very justifiable political anger in the right direction.
Sure, and change the argument from this bogus argument of big government being the enemy to an argument over better government. But, of course, the irony is that the Tea Party have been captured by the special interests. that, of course, is... But just in the last few minutes, though, I would like to ask you then about what I think is a more psychological problem here in terms of the disparity between the Republicans who are determined and the Democrats who seem feckless. Every Republican will stand up and say, I'm a proud conservative. It got so crazy, the competition to be the proud conservative amongst the Republicans running for president, that Mitt Romney said, I'm a severe conservative. And how many times have you heard liberals stand up and say I'm a proud liberal?
Well, you couldn't be more correct. It's in part, of course, again, the fear that the public out there also, when you ask people to identify themselves out there, for every liberal, there are two conservatives. So if you are running for office, you kind of timid. That's one reason people are timid. But there's another reason, and that is we don't have a strong liberal narrative. The other day, a reporter from CNN asked a group of Democratic voters, to summarize the Republican message. And they did very easily, very clearly. And then she asked them to summarize the Democratic message, and they couldn't come up with one. I'm not sure what the liberal message is. And look, I do this 24 hours, most days and most weeks. We need a narrative, and by the way, a uniting narrative, because there are 16 liberal narratives. But, not everybody agrees with Pacifica either.
Sure. So, well, that's the balkanization of the left. I thank you for joining us here. I'm afraid we've run out of time, Amitai Etzioni, but I thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Amitai Etzioni, who's a university professor, professor of international affairs, and director of the Institute for Communitarian Policy Studies at George Washington University. He served as a senior advisor to the White House from 1979 to 1980, and in 1990, he founded the Communitarian Network, a not-for-profit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to shoring up the moral, social, and political foundations of society. Dr. Etzioni is the author of 24 books, including The New Golden Rule, The Spirit of Community, and The Moral Dimension Towards a New Economics. His most recent books are My Brother's Keeper, A Memoir and a Message, From Empire to Community, A New Approach to International Relations, and How Patriotic is the Patriot Act? He has an article at Salon.com, How Conservatives Still Run America Despite Losing Elections. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and the assistant producer Nick Guarino. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.